Very casually, though, on the front end, David, I would like to mention that I've seen Collateral yet again, and this is not something I do. Collateral is, quite honestly, one of the best films of the 21st century. It is, I'm captivated every time just two people share the screen. Everything is so perfectly understated because this movie could be, it runs the risk, just conceptually, of being totally overwritten to compensate for the lack of stimuli. But it does such a great job of building tension. And there are these little subtleties in Tom Cruise's character in this film that gives you insight to who this person is. But there isn't this dramatic, like, oh, this is could have been my life. You just know it from the little subtleties, whether it's, spoiler alert, in the jazz club after, you know, executing one of your targets, softly putting the head down after you see a little insight into this person's personality and their passion for jazz, but it goes away. The movie can turn on a dime. The way that Vince changes throughout the movie but still stays true to he's a lost soul, and even to the very end, what he says upon the climax of that film and the way that Jamie Foxx's character builds up, it is just a perfect film.
Is this an accident that you're watching it multiple times, or like you're just finding it going through the channels?
No, I watched it again. I rented it twice in the last month. I am just fixated on this film because I think it is perfect and it's aged so well, which is not really something that you can say for, like, outside of Ali, really any of Michael Mann's films, because they're very much set in a time. And this one is to a degree, but I guess the gritty way that it's shot, it's just perfect, man.
You sound like you're in love.
I'm in love with this film.
Like, you're glowing. I wish people could see your face right now, because I think we're only audio.
Yeah.
But this is a face that if there's someone in your life who you would look at like this and feel like this, it would be pretty something. And the other thing I want to ask you is, what is the statute of limitations for using the word spoiler alert? Why do you feel you have to use that for a movie like Collateral?
I know this film is like 20 years old because it's not a film that maybe everybody's gotten around to.
But that's their problem.
I want people to see this and enjoy it and share that experience with me, because Collateral is just not one of those films that people go and seek out.
Because you did that. So by definition, it is.
Yeah, but I'm kind of weird. I guarantee you haven't thought about Collateral in the last 15 years until I brought it back to you, right?
And that's,
I
think, a guarantee.
Yeah, so I think people, it's maybe one of those films that people have had in their queue and haven't felt motivated to go out and watch. Please do it. It's perfect. All right. Well, so that's so random.
You gave me Ted Lasso to watch.
Yes, sir.
And I watched the entire series.
How long did it take you?
Over 2 days.
Oh, wow.
It was extremely quick. Remember, I have a lot of hours in my day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I fell in love with his character. I fell in love with him. And the only negative for me, and it was such a tiny, tiny, tiny negative, is that I never forgot that it was Jason Sudeikis. So he didn't turn into the character the way some actors can, the way some characters can, where you actually forget who the actor is, not because of makeup or anything, but he's so talented, and it was such the perfect pitch, and that is an intended pun. It was perfect from tonality, from pitch, from dialogue, from casting. There was not one problem I had with one episode. It didn't not deliver for 1 minute of one episode. And they walked a fine line, by the way, which is impossible to walk, because his character, if he doesn't do it right, becomes incredibly annoying and so campy that you don't even want to be in the same room. But it didn't happen that way.
That's the most tricky thing to navigate, especially in a 2020 world. It could very easily come off hokey. Even the construct is hokey. You already have to suspend disbelief from the get-go, and it's a strike against, really, just the whole construct of it. The fact that this is basically a marketing campaign that's been a spinoff, and you already know those don't work. And you're right, it is very much Sudeikis. He probably has the same amount of range as Tom Cruise. But I think that works. It's like Mr. Rogers wasn't a real person. The person behind Mr. Rogers, though, injected the humanity into the character that made you optimistic and fall in love, really, with this person. And maybe it hit at the right time. Maybe we were all just sort of searching for that optimism. Maybe it's just been a while since we've seen a TV character like this, because it really harkens back to a previous time. It's a throwback TV show and throws back to a time where you didn't have anti-heroes. This is a traditional good hero that you can get behind that made my life better.
I like picturing the studio heads when an idea is pitched. So in the real world, Sudeikis has an idea, and it doesn't matter that it's from characters previously created. They have that in the credits. So, you know, they walloped you with that fact that these were not original characters and et cetera, et cetera. But he had to pitch a season arc with a show. And I was picturing that meeting where there's no way that a non-Jason Sudeikis or someone who didn't have street cred could get this greenlit. And there are some movies that get greenlit that are very small that you don't. Jim Cavanaugh did a movie like that called Thunder Road, which I can't imagine how that got greenlit either, other than someone said, you know what, the budget's 250 grand, have fun. But this was an interesting thing for Apple TV Plus, and it made me realize that content is so craved by every executive, because there's so many platforms, so many people competing for content, that any sort of idea that can give you a 10-episode arc of 30 minutes each that has some iota of a chance of entertaining somebody, you're going to get it greenlit.
And even then, it still found itself on Apple TV Plus, which just leads me to believe that many studios probably pass on this content because, yes, they are previously constructed characters. But I also think it's important to note, for those that maybe don't have the backstory, it was created by Jason Sudeikis. These were really popular viral marketing videos that they made to launch NBC's Premier League coverage. And I wouldn't even tell people to go and seek those videos out, because they do a lot of callback to some of the jokes maybe that you would have seen that really worked and made it funny in the promo. But if you see him again in the show and you saw the and you just try to do a refresher, maybe the jokes don't land quite as well.
So I hadn't heard of Ted Lasso. I hadn't seen one of the commercials for NBC in the Premier League, not one. So to me, it was all new, including when I watched the credits at the end of the first episode. I didn't know what they were talking about. Characters previously created made me think that Jason Sudeikis had the characters in some sort of Saturday Night Live or some sort of a stand-up routine that he had done. I had no idea till I read about it after the series. And by the way, the idea for the season's arc is not original in any way. You know, fish out of water, a woman who inherits a team and wants to crash the team. It reminded me of Major League in that way. It is the old baseball movie with Margaret Whitten. And so there's nothing original about it, actually, but it's still perfect. Anyway, thank you for the recommendation, because you are really good at recommending movies and seasons of shows to me. So
well,
thank you.
Well, I appreciate the compliment. And with that being said, here comes another one.
Oh, God. All
right, and it's all right, not Collateral. I just wanted to have a casual conversation about Collateral, because the way that those two actors perform it and it's just that movie. You want to talk about a fine line? That movie is riding the rail from it. It could very easily be a bad movie, a cheesy movie, and everything is just so perfectly understated. But that's
I've seen Collateral, Mikey.
I know.
I've seen Collateral, but not. That's the question. Are you asking me to see it again?
See it again, but that's not my recommendation. But I'm please, everybody, this movie is so perfect. Okay, here's the recommendation. And it's actually a movie that I want to get around to seeing, but I was actually reminded of this movie while watching another movie. I watched The Perfect Storm. That movie did not hold up as well as I thought it did, but it reminded me of one of the great character actors that doesn't get a lot of credit, and I wonder if you feel the same way, John Hawkes. John Hawkes is a
phenomenal actor.
He is an incredible actor, and it reminded me of a movie that I saw several years ago that I absolutely loved. It got some shine during the award season of 2012, but it was just sort of cast aside because it wasn't best picture quality. But the performance from John Hawkes in this movie, it has a heart, it has a soul, and it made you really feel for the character. And not to draw it back to Collateral, but this is also a film that most of the movie is just shared between two people. So you need really good performances in a film like that for it to work. The movie that I'm talking about, I'm curious if you've seen it, is The Sessions with John Hawkes.
Yes, of course I have.
It's a phenomenal film. For those that don't know what the the plot is to this movie. It's a man who came over, he was placed in an iron lung, and he goes to this sex therapist, or, well, he doesn't go, the sex therapist comes to him, and he finds a lot of stuff about him. He wants to lose his virginity, basically, with however time he has left, because he's sort of a depressed character because of his situation, finds hope through a sex therapist, and it's just a brilliant performance from John Hawkes.
Do you remember The Upside, which was with Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston, which was a remake of a French movie? The French movie was way better than The Upside, but it's the same type of concept where it's the caregiver who comes to take care of someone who is lonely and really has no path to happiness, no path to existence. And John Hawkes, who is my experience with him had been more of a character actor who is the would belong in Yellowstone, the Kevin Costner series, or who would belong in,
I think, he was in Deadwood.
So that type of person. And he plays, it just shows he's got great range. But no, he doesn't get a lot of attention. He's not a particularly Hollywood star looking guy. And so people can be dismissive. Listen, there are not many Tom Cruises. Someone who's unbelievably good looking and can act and can be in serious movies and in action movies, just that sort of range. John Hawkes is not that guy. I just watched a movie last night with Richard Jenkins, who is one of my favorite actors of all time.
He can do it. You want to talk about range. He's got incredible range, Richard Jenkins.
He's done it all. And he's not particularly someone you'd say, well, that's a good looking guy. Right. Or, you know, Tommy Lee Jones. Yet these guys just have a way of just being really good at what they do. And so I have seen The Sessions, but for people who have not, that's a random. I can't believe you just thought of that random movie. Did you just come across that on a channel?
No, like I said, I was watching The Perfect Storm with Mark Wahlberg and George Clooney, and John Hawkes is a minor character in that film.
But that doesn't answer the question. Do you Google actors and movies you're watching to see what other movies they've been in, and that informs you what you want to watch next?
No, watching him in that film, I'm like, wow, this guy is just so good in everything that he does. He's one of the great character actors. I wanted to have a discussion about character actors, but then I was like, man, remember that movie, The Sessions? That movie was awesome. The performance from Helen Hunt, too. It's just, I'm really in on how well people can deliver performances. Maybe it's because of Ted Lasso subconsciously, because these are very dangerous roles. Richard Jenkins is another person that lands the role every time. It doesn't seem like it on the surface. Maybe The Sessions does, because that's a very difficult, physically demanding role to select. But these movies hinge on the lead characters absolutely nailing it. If something is off, you might not be able to even put your finger on it. But they need to deliver in perfect ways. Helen Hunt and John Hawkes do that in The Sessions. It's very difficult to have a movie that centralized, hey, 88% of this film is going to be these two people, these interactions, and we're going to build carefully crafted characters, and you're not going to get annoyed by it. Jason Sudeikis does that with Ted Lasso. John Hawkes does that with The Sessions. And Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise both do that in Collateral. And this
bring it back to Collateral,
this
baby.
This is the weirdest triple header. I've built quite the triangle with Ted Lasso, The Sessions, and Collateral.
I wonder whether actors, is it a profession where people think that they can do what actors do? Because in the NBA, you don't think that you can be LeBron James. You know you don't have that physical ability. I wonder whether, because certainly with presidents or GMs or managers, everybody says, oh, I can do that. You know, I can figure out who to pitch next in the bullpen. I can make a batting order. I wonder whether acting is the same, where people think, I can do that. Or do they not realize that the skill and the talent level of someone like a John Hawkes or someone like a Richard Jenkins, but go on and on and on. These are the LeBron James and the Chris Bosches and the Dwayne Wades of that profession. And it is not, there's a million actors doing a million things who can't land a million roles, not because they can't get them, because they're just not good enough. They're players who play in Europe. They're players who play in Asia. They are players who never make it out of the minor leagues. That's the majority of actors and actresses. And those guys, men, women, are still better than you and I would ever be acting. So the difference, I wonder if people realize that acting is the same as professional athletes.
Since we're on this kick right now to start this week's podcast on films and recommendations, I'm going to go ahead and do it a little bit earlier than we're used to. David, what is your recommendation and review for the week?
Well, I'm going to go right to Congillionaire. So that was with Richard Jenkins and, oh my God, what's the woman's name who is in Across the Universe? Elijah, it's not Elijah Wood. It is, well, she was married Elijah to Marilyn Manson.
Oh my God,
I'm completely blanking. This is unreal.
No, she's in Westworld.
Gina Rodriguez, Deborah Winger from Officer and a Gentleman, Richard Jenkins.
Evan Rachel Wood.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she's phenomenal in the first season of Westworld, and then I gave up on Westworld one episode into season two, and I heard it's quite the trek through season two. Season three is okay.
She's had an incredible career and an incredible life story, actually. So they got together and made this movie, and it's called Congillionaire. And it's a movie that just came out on demand. I actually paid $19.99 to watch this movie.
Oh, wow.
Because I love Evan Rachel Wood, despite the fact I couldn't remember her name. And when Richard Jenkins is a movie, by definition, I'm going to watch the movie. No matter what he's in and how big his role is, I'm going to watch it. So this is a movie about parents. Deborah Winger, who I hadn't seen really since Terms of Endearment, An Officer and a Gentleman. I didn't realize she was still acting.
Wow.
And so for me, she's frozen in time in Officer and a Gentleman. Clearly, she's not been frozen in time. So they are the parents of Evan Rachel Wood, and Gina Rodriguez ends up being a friend of the family. And they're a family of grifters, except it's not like The Grifters, which is a great movie that I love with Annette Bening and John Cusack. It is a movie about love and about parents who don't show their child love, and there's no sense of affection. They have no money, so they basically go from one scam to the next to live basically a life of almost homelessness. And they do things as a triumvirate. It's just the mother, the father, and the child. And all the child wants is this connection with a parent. That's all she wants. And she doesn't get it because for the parents, the child is merely a third actor in a world of deceit and in a world of we never were able to get the American dream. We were never able to make a living. And so this is what we do. And our child is merely there to help us. Sort of like in movies where the children are used by the parents. So in that way, it is incredibly sad, incredibly moving. And then she opens her eyes, Evan Rachel Wood, the child, when Gina Rodriguez enters, because somehow she gets a perspective she never had. So you have to suspend disbelief by saying, how could she be 26 years old and never realize that there could be love, there could be life without this life of crime? And it's penny anti-crime. They don't rob banks. They do things $10 at a time. Every character in this movie is worth watching. The payoff at the end is beautiful. The pacing of it is such that if you are interested in action movies only, or you need a movie to provide you with pace, you won't like it. But if you're willing to provide a movie with its pace and let a movie breathe, this is a movie that's worth your time. It's called Congillionaire.
I'm going to check it out, maybe not for $19.99, but when it finds itself, when it makes its way to a streaming platform for the subscription price, I'll definitely put that to my list because I do like Evan Rachel Wood and I do like Richard Jenkins. Let's revisit the main topic from our last episode. I'm curious because you actually illuminated me and a lot of our audience on what actually happened there. I had no idea that Major League Baseball was made aware of this positive test during the second inning, and because the Dodgers won and because now we have an election that has consumed a nation and other sports are going on, that story just goes back into the darkness and no one is even really curious to know if any other Dodgers tested positive, if there was any sort of fallout from Justin Turner returning back to the field or sharing a dugout for several innings. What have you heard about exactly what went down and how happy is Major League Baseball that the Dodgers won?
Well, but for you bringing it up, if you think about it, the story has disappeared. And there's really the narrative in baseball now, they went right to announcing Gold Glove winners and to award finalists, and they're heading into their off-season calendar, and they're burying the lead, which is that they need new COVID protocols, and they're going to need them for next season. And they're letting, smartly, the NBA take center stage when it comes to labor strife, because that's real what's going on right now. As a matter of fact, the NBA is voting very shortly. We've been talking about this on Nothing Personal. Adam Silver railroaded the union into starting this season on December 22nd, pre-Christmas, and the players want more time off, but they're not going to get it because in a system where you share money with the owners and all of the money is on the table, there's no hidden books, there's no nothing. If you don't play, you don't get paid. So the players just had a choice, either come back and play or don't. So all of that has been leading the news. Baseball's sitting back. There's no testing going on. So if the Dodgers have COVID, it's going to be covered up completely. Because once the World Series ended, the daily testing regime under the agreement that was cut by the players and the owners, guess what? That agreement expired. The 2020 operations manual that told all of us about how COVID would be treated, it expired. So now players are at home, and if they don't feel well, they don't feel well. I would tell my players, if you're sick, you have to call me. We're going to get you tested. We want to make sure you're being taken care of. We want to make sure that you get better before spring training starts. If you're a player, we're going to keep. But from an industry standpoint, mum's the word. They're going right into free agency, and they're barreling ahead the way the NFL did. MLB wants to be the NFL so badly. They're now acting like the NFL was during COVID while NBA and MLB were trying to figure out what to do. Now MLB is just going to have its offseason and let the other leagues worry about it.
So every year needs to have its own CBA, unique to whatever the circumstances are. What are the repercussions for the existing CBA, considering that every new season has to be negotiated between the two parties? How does that affect the existing agreement?
So that's not true. So a CBA, that this CBA in Major League Baseball lasts through 2021. In a normal world, and I put air quotes around that because we're not in a normal world, but in a normal world, once you have a CBA, there's during the 5 years of the CBA, you don't need a new agreement every year. That agreement is what the two parties live with. Within that agreement, there can be separate negotiations. There's grievances, but all under the umbrella of the main collective bargaining agreement. But COVID required a brand new agreement, and it was done outside of the existing collective bargaining agreement because the president, President Trump at the time, well, I guess he's still a president, declared a national emergency. And that barely made the news. But with contracts and in sports and in many other businesses, by declaring, quote unquote, a national emergency, that opens up all of these collective bargaining agreements to all sorts of new discussions and negotiations, including the right to cancel. Like the NBA, you've heard that they've got this window to cancel the CBA. The owners do and the players do, this 45-day window. That's because of the state of the world we're currently in. And that's not going away, which is why for next season, they should be under the old CBA in Major League Baseball, but they're going to have to renegotiate all sorts of things because spring training, we're in November right now. Spring training's due to start in a couple of months.
And the collective bargaining agreement probably won't have a time added clause because it's not operating under normal circumstances. What exactly is the force majeure language in Major League Baseball's collective bargaining agreement?
So force majeure is a word of art. That is in a contract. When you have a force majeure clause, it's something, the best way to describe it is something that I can't do to you and something that you can't do to me. It's something that's done by someone else to us. That's the definition of force majeure. There are people who say act of God.
Act of God.
That it's something that not only you can't do to me and I can't do to you, but it's not a normal person can do to us. It's some sort of ephemeral being like a virus. Now, I could argue that, and this is not political in any way, but you could argue that COVID is not an act of God. You could argue, as some people on the right side say, that it was a virus that came out of China. You could argue that it's a virus that came because people were developing vaccines or bioweapons. Whatever is, you could say it's not God-related in theory.
You could make the argument, yeah, an act of God is something that's unavoidable. And you could make the argument, if you were a litigious person, that this was avoidable. Or an overly political person, you can make that argument as well, I guess.
And people do. But for purposes of this conversation, COVID is a force majeure. So it creates an entire new, it's like when you're piloting a plane and you have to, when everything's going right, you're just hanging out talking about, you know, where you're having dinner when you land. When things go wrong, you have to get out the checkbook and you have to go to the actual thing that's on every plane. It's that folder that has if left engine fails, here are the 20 checklists you have to do. That's what actually happens in sports when something like this happens. They have to actually read the collective bargaining agreement again and go through all the things that you'd like to never deal with. So what they have to do again is get it to the table and all the things we got to know, like extra inning, man on second base for extra innings, like the universal DH, like the expanded playoffs, those are not part of baseball at all. So for people who thought that they would see that in 2021, you're not going to see that unless it's agreed to again by the players and the owners.
New season, new sort of placeholder agreement with the structure of the existing CBA. Major League Baseball saw upticks in the RSN ratings numbers. Obviously, there's some lessons to learn. What are you hearing about what we saw last season that may carry over to this upcoming season?
In terms of rules, because the uptick in the RSN ratings, as you know, if I don't know if we've talked about it here, but certainly on Nothing Personal, no one cares about ratings. It's only PR optics,
right,
where you can do a press release saying it's going well.
Right, but it's still very much a good trend in a sport that had very negative trends when it came to viewership. So there are some lessons to be learned from it, no?
No, I'm not sure what the lessons are. That's like saying the World Series. But if I'm willing to say that everything's great because local RSNs had increased ratings and viewership, that means I have to acknowledge that nationally baseball's dying because the World Series was the lowest rating World Series of all time. So I'm not willing to go to either extreme because I don't think either one is true.
Fair enough. Okay, so what carries over from next season, from last season to this upcoming one?
So it depends how angry the players union gets. And I think you're going to start seeing a level of anger when there's going to be so many free agents who don't get signed and so many teams who are lowering their payroll. I think that you have no idea what's coming in Major League Baseball because teams can control it.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but this has been a brewing problem since before the pandemic. You have guys like Dallas Keuchel and Eric Hosmer that were these really good players, not necessarily great, although Keuchel had really impressive numbers, but he was of a certain age where I guess teams evaluate their wins above replacement and feel like, yeah, it'll be less productivity, but we can call up somebody from the minors, pay them peanuts, and we're not going to give you $14.5 million this season. And what happens is you have really good players that have had really nice careers, free agents for a very long time, and it seems to be a brewing problem. You're saying this pandemic only amplifies that brewing issue?
It worse than amplifies it. It puts it under the magnifying glass, the types of which would start a fire and kill an ant. And Eric Hosmer did get paid, by the way.
No, I understood, but it took him a while. So did Dallas Keuchel.
So the point, there's going to be players who don't get paid at all, because let's look at someone like Brad Hand. Again, a very good conversation we were able to have at length on Nothing Personal. $10 million. Big deal for one of the best closers in baseball. The Indians waived him. They let him go. They're not going to keep him for $10 million because every owner watched the World Series and sees all the Tampa Bay Rays pitchers who are getting paid $600,000. And they're saying, hey, just find me some of those guys. I want guys throwing 98 who make 600 grand. I'm not willing to pay for Brad Hand. Now, there are owners who will pay for JT Realmuto and Trevor Bauer and George Springer. It's very much, and this is a much longer political conversation, I could argue that the way our world is now, the bottom end of the wealth spectrum and the top end of the wealth spectrum have both increased, and the middle class has been squeezed out. There really is not as big a middle class in this country as there used to be. And that's the same in baseball. The mediocre players, the guys who are mediocre, can you imagine what I'm about to say? The mediocre players making $8 million to $10 million a year. Uh-huh. I mean, it's just funny to say that, right?
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
I mean, mediocre. I'm really worried about the above average players that are just not all-star caliber. They seem to be the ones that they think that their market price should be of a certain number, and they're just not getting it, and they're the ones left out in the cold.
Isn't that the middle class?
Good point.
I mean, that's if you look at what the average salary is, I mean, and if you look at the average talent or however you want to say it, right, you're not talking about perennial all-stars. You're not talking about the top 30 free agents. You're talking about there's hundreds of free agents every year. We seem to do in the media, we focus on the top free agents by position. But when you're an executive running a team, our free agent list, it's pages and pages long of available players. And what I would always say to our GM I'd say it to Hill or to Bindfest. I'd say, listen, don't tell me that we have to sign Jose Reyes. Let Jeffrey tell me that he wants to sign Jose Reyes. Your job is to find the guy who signs a minor league deal with us, who makes the team and wins 14 games. Because Jeffrey won't be able to identify that person. I can't identify that person. But when these guys, these baseball guys come in during your offseason meetings and say, listen, we have a need at closer. We need to offer Kenley Jansen or Aroldis Chapman $85 million. Give me a break. That's not helping. That's not how you win executive of the year. You come to me and say, hey, listen, we're about to do a trade for Randy Arozarena. You don't know him, but we're going to do a trade for him. And just you wait. He's going to help this team win. That's a good baseball executive.
You mentioned closers, and the one time you famously spent big time money on a closer, it ended up being Heath Bell, and it was a disastrous deal for you guys and set the franchise back, quite honestly. You guys had a really good run of getting closers that were available on the cheap, either via trade, even though you paid a hefty price for Ugo Urbina, but you won the World Series. It was worth it. You gave up Adrian Gonzalez, who ended up being a really good baseball player. But Armando Benitez, you guys just found a way to get really effective closers at that position. Who gets credit for that?
Let me tell you how that went. So Armando Benitez, Joe Borowski, I don't know if you remember that name.
Yeah, Joe. Yeah,
standing closer.
Yeah, Jobo had a really good run for you guys.
You know what's weird about him? Joe Borowski didn't like wearing clothes. And before games, he would walk around the clubhouse fully naked, covered from head to toe. Well, not if I say head to toe, do you think that means forehead? From neck to toe in baby powder. To the point where he looked like Casper the Ghost. I never had a player who did that the way he did that. And I asked him why, and it just became his thing, like Wade Boggs eating fried chicken or, you know, Orlando Cabrera watching porn. Whatever the case is, everyone's got a thing. Borowski would be naked, full of powder. Anyway, he was one of those closers.
I'm sorry. I have to seize on a couple of things that you said because this is utterly bizarre. But we'll get back to Joe Borowski and the baby powder. I was not familiar with Orlando Cabrera watching pornography before games the way that Wade Boggs would famously eat his chicken before games. What's the deal with Orlando Cabrera?
So Orlando will admit this to you, maybe. I don't know if he will, and I'm not sullying his reputation because I don't disagree with anything he did, and he always performed. He was never late to any, by the way, pun not intended. He always showed up to every game. We put him in the lineup every day, loved having him. He ended up playing on the Red Sox. I mean, this is a guy who had a real career.
Yeah, he had a good career, and you had him in Montreal.
Yes.
A really good double play combination with Cabrera and Jose Vidro. Really good.
Why do you know that?
Because Jose Vidro was talked about yesterday, and I'll bring you in on the conversation. He didn't make over the air, but Sugats and I were trying to find the most professional hitter, and it became a thread throughout the national show. Tim Kirchin settled the debate. The most professional hitter is Matt Stairs. But to be labeled a professional hitter, you can't be great. You can't be all-star caliber. You have to be a guy that's maybe bounced around the league a little bit, but what keeps you in the league is you work a count, you hit at the occasional gapper. You are just a professional hitter. He whispered in my ear, Jose Vidro, and I'm like, too good. The productivity out of that second base position, especially at that time, Jose Vidro, way too good to be known as a professional hitter. But you guys in Montreal had an amazing double play combination at a time where it was difficult to get offensive productivity from the middle of your infield.
We couldn't win 70 games, by the way, because we didn't have pitching.
Yeah.
You know, we had Javier Vasquez before Reyndelez. Yeah. So what Cabrera would do is back the way the clubhouse worked at Olympic Stadium, it wasn't like a new stadium where everything.
Oh, it's a total shithole. I went to Montreal a couple of years ago and I wanted to see Olympic Stadium. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What a shithole.
But that's 20 years after it was used. I mean, it used to be the cream of the crop when it was built for the Olympics, when it had a retractable roof. I mean, other than the turf, it was great. I mean, I loved Olympic
Stadium.
Yeah,
but what
memories.
I saw, you could tell it was a shithole 20 years ago.
When we were there, because that is 20 years ago, was. But I'm talking 40 years ago now when it was not. I want to say it was built for 1976, but I could be wrong. Did Montreal host the Olympics in 76?
I'll find out. But I will also,
maybe.
No pun intended, I want to keep my eye on the ball here. What's going on with this porn?
It's not a big, why? This is hardly a big deal. This is what Orlando liked to do before games. And we always knew it. There's a time that you leave them alone. Listen, there's a lot of players who would say, I don't want to play a game with a loaded gun. And so you do what you do, and that's the end of it. I mean, you don't think about it much. It's just, it was never a big deal to us.
Okay.
It was not, there was no Me Too movement. There was no, this is offensive. There was no judgment. Every player had a thing.
But he wouldn't just, but he would do this out in the open? He would watch this out in the open? Or he would just, like, go somewhere in private? Because there are nightmare stories, and not to draw this comparison, because he finds himself in prison right now. Kellen Winslow would just be on the team plane.
Absolutely
watching
not.
Hardcore pornography, and you kind of knew maybe something's not right with that guy.
Absolutely not. Orlando Cabrera was an upstanding guy. He did, no. This is just a thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
just...
Listen, if for people who view, I view porn in a slightly different way than most people. It's like masturbation, right? No one, if you say that word, it's like this dirty word. It's like, no one does that. You can't talk about it. But everybody does that.
Yeah.
But no one's willing to talk about it. It's very bizarre to me.
I think I saw an aggregated tweet about this, about Jeffrey Toobin. So let's make sure to be careful and on the right side of this. It was someone that spun it like, we need to have a conversation about normalizing masturbation. You're approaching it the right way. Toobin did not.
Okay. I have no idea what Toobin did at all.
Oh, he was on a Zoom.
Oh, you're talking about the legal analyst?
Yeah,
I was thinking
CNN.
About the guy who played the part of the woman in a TV show, Jeffrey Tambor.
Yeah, yeah. No, not Jeffrey Tambor, whose career, by the way, appears to be over.
Because of what he did. But
yeah.
he did something that is offensive and wrong.
Yeah. He's not just because there's a little similarity to him, but he was another guy that had a sneaky range to him. Could be very good in comedic roles and dramatic roles, sometimes blend the two, not unlike Richard Jenkins.
So Jeffrey Toobin, what he's guilty of is stupidity, right? That is not, I didn't judge him for the act. I judged him for the action. Those are two very different things in my mind. But in any case, none of that matters. We're talking about Orlando Cabrera.
Right.
Very quickly.
If I'm doing some moralizing, I'd probably have a bit more problem with just having to see Joe Borowski naked every day covered in baby powder in terms of a little unsettling.
But it's not in a clubhouse. They're all naked all the time, right? It's not unsettling at all. Like that part. It was the powder part. It was unsettling because it looked like there was something wrong with him. Like, why would he be doing this?
Especially when you get to that bathing suit area, it's just eyes up.
It's so here's a funny thing about being in a clubhouse with naked guys all the time. You have to be so super careful because everybody looks below the belt and you're doing that. Everyone says they don't, but everyone does because of comparison. You're like, I want to see, is that. And so you do that, but you don't want to get caught doing it, but everybody does it. And so the clubhouse is a constant stage. If for those of you who have not been on a team with a group shower, right? It's like being in the shower with your teammates. You know, eventually you learn, but when the new teammate comes, the first shower is always a big deal because everyone's like, all right, what are we dealing with here?
Who establishes the high watermark in so many words? You want to see where you fit in.
Fernando Seganal was a player we had that
I always heard Vladimir Nunez was
historic.
I always heard like
good
Vladimir
one. See,
Nunez.
By the way.
Vladimir Nunez went to the bathroom in a specific way because he was just worried about his hog. What was his story there?
Well, you just can't sit to pee because you end up needing a snorkel.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, let's continue this this week's theme of having a thread. Powder. Have you ever seen the 1995 film starring Sean Patrick Flannery and Jeff Goldblum?
P-O-W-T-E-R? Is that how you're spelling it?
Powder? No, powder. Which one?
The name of the movie you're talking about.
Powder, like baby powder.
Is it spelled P-O-W-D-E-R?
D-E-R.
I don't think I have.
Wow.
I've seen a movie Powder with a T. Is that possible?
I don't think so. Powder is the one.
Back to the closer answer. I really want to get back to it because it's so interesting.
I did want to give you guys credit for finding closers off of,
baseball guys signed these players. Borowski, Jones, Benitez. And we had a run, Leo Nunez.
Yes.
Which wasn't his name. He ended up changing his name to Juan Carlos Oviedo.
I also thought he was going to be better, but unforeseen circumstances.
Wait a minute. He was great.
Not after getting pinched.
Well, once he became Juan Carlos Oviedo sucked.
Yeah.
Leo Nunez was awesome.
Yeah, Leo Nunez is great. I'm attaching.
We had this amazing string of closers, and Jeffrey came to us and said, we're signing Heath Bell. And we said, let's try to keep doing what we're doing because we don't get financially hamstrung and it gives us money to put in another direction. And his view was going into a new ballpark, we can't take the chance that you guys are going to be right again, because they'd been right so many times that the view was, and this is a common gambling view, right? When you do roulette, you take red 5 times in a row and it keeps coming up black and you say, listen, I'm going to do red again because it's got to come up red this time. And of course, the math is that your odds are the same every time the wheel is spun. And so what happened with the closers is Jeffrey said, you're out of luck. It's coming up double zero green now because there's no way. And Heath Bell was available. And Heath Bell, people don't remember this.
He was awesome.
He was phenomenal in San Diego. And he had come from the Mets, so Jeffrey had seen him quite a bit. So I don't regret the signing of Heath Bell. I regret the fact that we were forced to sign him without doing our homework. We signed Heath Bell without ever meeting him. And when you sign a free agent to a long-term deal without a meeting, it means that you've, by definition, overpaid. It means, by definition, that you've gotten it wrong. So we didn't have a chance to keep identifying. But those one-year players are done not by an owner, always done by baseball people.
Well, it's a credit to your organization, and then you just burned up all the capital. What it was funny that the exact opposite thing happened, and then you guys struggled to fill that position for a while, even though you had some really talented arms, but no one's stuck, and you guys seem to find the Marlins always seem to just have plug and play guys at that position.
Well, we went back to remember Steve Cishek was just a guy we drafted.
He was awesome.
People don't remember him, though. He was still in the big leagues this past year until he was let go. But he was phenomenal for us as a closer. We had a bunch of guys in the late innings who were good. But new owner, the first player Jeffrey ever signed was a guy named Graham Lloyd back in Montreal his first year in 2000.
Former
Graham
Yankee.
Lloyd was an Australian guy, played for the Yankees. We gave him 3 years, $9 million. The most money ever given to a non-closer at that time back in 2000. Can you imagine?
Wow.
$3 million was the most ever.
Yeah, you could, along the lines, you could see Jeffrey's Yankee fandom impact some of the signings. You did so with Hideki Irabu, which ended up being a disastrous signing. So I'm sure you had a buck against. Oh,
that was a trade.
No pun intended. You had a buck against Jeffrey's bad decisions often.
Well, you know, the Yankee thing was a real issue. The Hideki Irabu was a trade, not a signing.
Oh, okay.
And we traded away really good guys.
Yeah, who'd you trade?
And Brian Cashman took advantage of us. It was Christian Parker was the throw-in, but it was the guy who ended up going to, oh, my God.
There's a guy with high socks.
It was 3-1. It was 3 guys for Hideki Irabu.
I'm going to find this.
The first two we shouldn't have traded. Christian Parker was a throw-in by us because the Yankees asked for him. And the position we had, I'd look it up right now if I could.
Ruben Rivera, Rafael Medina.
No, that's not the trade.
No, that's a different one.
This is in 2000. It was in December of 99 or January of 2000 when this trade would have happened.
Yeah.
When Hideki Irabu was sent from the Yankees to the Expos. For players that Jeffrey didn't know because he had just bought the team and didn't care about minor league players because he wanted a starter at the big league level in Montreal who could help us win games. And he had known Hideki from watching the Yankees.
How the hell can I find this trade? I'm going to find this.
Hideki Irabu transactions. Yeah. By the way, he's no longer with us.
Hideki Irabu's no longer with us?
He committed suicide.
What? I'm finding... Yeah. Well, that's horribly sad.
Yes. He was a troubled... We had to drug him like Mr. T in the A-Team.
Wow.
We drugged him to get on team planes. He was so scared of flying, and he was so addicted to cigarettes that we had to put him to sleep. He never was awake for a team plane.
Wow.
Little-known fact there.
That is horribly sad.
Yes. He never remembered. He was supposed to be Dice K before Dice K was supposed to be Dice K, and Dice K never ended up being Dice K.
Yeah.
Hideki Irabu was going to be the guy.
This was after Hideo Nomo came into the league and was an absolute sensation, and everybody wanted to find the next Hideo Nomo.
And it just didn't, it never worked out. He didn't have a terrible career. He was in the big leagues for a while, but certainly did not end up being any sort of above average player.
Jake Westbrook.
Jake Westbrook, who ended up going to the Indians at some point. He ended up being a real major leaguer, but yeah. There's another player. Jake, it wasn't just Westbrook.
Jake Westbrook was a really good starter for a while. Nice career for Jake Westbrook.
Who's the second player?
Ted Lilly. Another Ted Lilly nice career.
These were serviceable major league pitchers. Ted Lilly and Jake Westbrook. The third guy, do I have it right? Was that Christian Parker?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'd remember him and not really in Westbrook. It's very bizarre.
That's weird because you gave up two good players.
How the brain works. But those are two good starters in Lilly and Westbrook, and they were cheap. Yeah. They would have been minimum guys, and that's the problem when you trade for someone making money. And when you watch a team like the Devil Rays, like the Tampa Bay Rays, no Devil anymore, they just don't make trades like that ever. It's why they are successful.
Well, I'm bummed because I just found out about Hideki Arabu years after the fact. That's incredibly sad. Powder, 1995 film that was a critical success but couldn't. This was even prior to the Me Too movement. The director got pinched for child abuse or child sex abuse. It was a horrible story. So this was a film that was trying to be Oscar bait. It had a fairly ridiculous premise. There was this albino played by Sean Patrick Flannery that had telepathic powers or something like that, and Jeff Goldblum was in it.
I remember. Yeah, I would like you to maybe say that differently. Me Too, that movement has nothing to do with child abuse.
No, I understand. I understand, okay. But it just
make sure the audience
Me Too
gets
sort
that.
Of made us all heightened to what was going on in Hollywood, and while this is not directly correlated to that, it just speaks to our heightened awareness of such things. This was prior to that. Where sometimes people would even look over horrible things going on.
Do I look differently? This is a topic we probably should never discuss, but you know that the law, and I learned this in law school, child abuse or sexual misconduct with a child, the definition of that is anyone who is not of age. Mm-hmm. So you can be in a state where it's 18 years, let's say. If someone is 17 years old, yeah. 11 months,
we talked
and 28
about this
days,
with Emily in Paris, and I just wanted to stay away from it.
Right? Or
the arbitrary moving lines of state lines.
Right. Where you have to know, like, what state, et cetera, that people, we talk to our kids about this. Not just our players, but we talk to like my actual kids that if when you are 18, in theory, you can't date a freshman in high school. And in my high school, there were seniors and freshmen dating all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a normal I mean, the girl freshmen were dating guy seniors. Did you have that in high school or are you too young?
I married my high school sweetheart. When I first started dating her, I was 17. Shortly after we first started dating, I was 18. So I could have been.
Is she younger than you?
Yeah.
So you, in theory, you were violating the law and you were, basically that's
criminal.
Child.
It's a criminal. You're a criminal.
Well, thankfully we saved ourselves for the wedding night. So jokes on you. Yeah.
Sorry, I take it
back. I can achieve all things through Christ. David Samson, thank you so much for joining us this week on the Local Hour. Make sure to check out his podcast, Nothing Personal with David Samson. We'll get his review next week. I'm going to go watch Powder just because Joe Borowski walks through the clubhouse nude but covered in baby powder.
We reviewed Kajillionaire.
Oh, yes, Kajillionaire. I got to see that one too, but I made the promise I'm not paying $19.99 for anything these days. I'm still waiting for Bill and Ted because your review was so bad. By the way, it seems that you got that one wrong. The Bill and Ted movie actually got really good reviews.
It was terrible.
I want the nostalgia. David Samson, thank you so much for joining us. I know you got to run and record Nothing Personal, so thank you again.
Have a great day.
You too. Thank you, David.
All right, Mikey, have a good one.